Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're just here talking about, well, today, domestic rugby. This is the midweek domestic podcast, MWDP, with me, Tim, with him, JB.
Hello, Tim.
Sipping on an espresso.
Yeah.
Well, long black.
Long black, yes.
And there's Phil from the Egg Chasers TMO shipping container.
Hello, gentlemen.
Right. I'm going to start with something straight off the bat.
Okay.
So I'm going to show let people in on how the sausage is made.
Uh-oh.
This particular podcast, it is a midweek domestic podcast, but we are sat here when, JB?
Sunday evening.
It's Sunday night.
What? It's not Monday evening?
It's not Monday evening.
Not this time. It's not Monday evening this time.
What?
I know. So we're sat here on a Sunday evening and JB forgot on a international podcast to reveal, before it's officially announced, the new Leicester Tigers director of rugby. But that's fitting because this is the midweek domestic podcast.
Exactly.
So why don't you announce it now? And if it's wrong, you'll look like an absolute tool.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I don't know if he is coming in as director of rugby. I've kind of been a bit rattled now. But I think he is. So,
So there was Jordan Murphy went not so long ago, and there's been some other movement at Leicester Tigers.
Yes.
So what else happened at Leicester Tigers? I can't remember. Something happened this week, didn't it? Oh, Jan McGinty.
Yeah, so why don't you go through some of the moves that have happened in Leicester Tigers?
Boris Stankovic, gone.
We're gone. So
Boris Stankovic, scrum coach, gone. Jordan Murphy was head coach, then director of rugby, was attack coach before that, gone. Who else is there? Lewis Deacon, still there.
Is he?
Hanging on.
Simon Cohen, CEO.
Gone. Jan McGinty, head of recruitment, gone.
Yeah. Jed.
Jed Glynn.
Jed Glynn, head of rugby.
Gone.
Gone.
Who else was there? Who else was part of the coaching team? Oh, Matt Parr, strength and conditioning coach, still there. Good bloke as well.
Yep. Now they have had additions. They've had the guy who was the strength and conditioning for South Africa,
Aled Waters.
Yep.
Yep. And they have had obviously Borthwick's come in, and of course, how could we forget Mike Ford?
Mike Ford, of course. What's his current role? Defence coach.
Yes. Which also means Mark Bakewell has gone.
Oh yeah, Mark Bakewell gone.
Yeah. So there's been quite a lot of comings and goings.
A little while ago, you did a picture of the Leicester coaches and said...
Oh, yes, someone did, didn't they?
We should start crossing them off. How many of those seven are still there? I think maybe two.
Mm. So anyway, there will be a Monday morning meeting. Would you believe it? An actual Monday morning meeting.
Because they had a Friday morning meeting for Jordan Murphy. They had a Thursday afternoon meeting for Jan McGinty, but they're going back to the Monday mornings. They're going back to Monday mornings, which are the new Thursday afternoons, which were the new Friday afternoons,
yes,
which were the new Monday morning, but now it's back to Monday morning.
So who'd like, have you got any guesses who the new director of rugby might be?
New director of rugby, Leicester Tigers.
Well, he might be director of recruitment, he might be more on the recruitment. He's gonna be back office, or he's not going to be director of rugby in the same way Rob Baxter is, for instance.
Leon Lloyd.
No.
No, he's a very successful businessman in his own right. Is it a former Leicester player?
No.
Okay. Is it someone who is moving from the same or similar role in coaching elsewhere?
No.
Okay, Clive Woodard. No.
So they're not a current coach. Mm-mm. Or not in a current not, similar position.
Not current coach, never been a coach.
See, this is going to be really boring for a lot of people who might know the answer by the time they listen to this.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. But they wouldn't know.
But they're just going through me and Phil trying to work out who it is.
It's not your man who's currently at Wasps who was at Gloucester.
It is not Stephen Vaughan, though.
Steve Vaughan.
Never.
Freddie Tuolangi, Global Bro Sports, is now.
That's a good
an amalgamation.
That is a good shout. That's a better shout.
So is it a former player?
Yes. But not a Tigers player.
Never played for Tigers.
Not that I know of, unless I got that wrong.
So are they New Zealander?
No.
Are they English?
Yes.
Are they an ex-England international?
No.
Did they finish rugby in the last 5 years?
No.
Okay. Are they over 50?
No.
Are they friends with Steve Borthwick?
Yes.
Okay.
Got a good relationship there. Which, of course, you'd have to have.
Lee Mears?
No.
No. Okay.
Was their main club Saracens when they played?
No.
Was it Bath?
No. You're never going to get this in a million years. You could do this for a long, long time. Wouldn't.
Go on. Tell us then, JB. Put us out of our misery.
The answer is agent and owner, if not co-owner, of Green Room Sport, Richard Wilkes, resident of...
I know him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, to put a bit of meat on this bone... Richard Wilkes, who is a very, very successful agent.
I think he might have been my brother's agent.
I think he might have as well, actually. Is an agent with Green Room Sport. Very successful, very, very, very successful agent with a pretty large portfolio of clients, yeah. I might add. They have looked at him to come in to do the recruitment, which makes a lot of sense because he has got pre-existing relationships with people like... Simon Cohen. In fact, he's got more than pre-existing relationships. I believe Green Room Sport was actually Simon Cohen's business before it was Richard Wilkes's. He's got a great relationship with the Leicester Tigers. In fact, his brother is in the academy there as a coach.
Does it mean he has to step back from his role running that business? Because there's a slight conflict of interest there.
Well, as I understand it, he will leave his business and take up this role with Leicester Tigers short term.
Okay.
So it's a short-term appointment until they go for a longer-term appointment. But that's what he's coming in to do. He's coming in to do the recruitment.
So it's basically like an NFL general manager, is it?
I guess so.
But he's only going to be brokering it, not deciding who. General managers in NFL decide who they're going to sign, don't they?
The answer is, I don't know until it happens. Hmm. So the interesting thing with Leicester Tigers, of course, is it was Simon Cohen that did a lot of the recruitment because of his background as an agent. And as you've rightly pointed out, in the NFL... recruitment is seen as a different thing to coaching. And I think they've got a point there. I think there are different skill sets between looking at a player and deciding what you want from him and then...
moneyballing it.
Coaching, yeah. So it's a very interesting move by Leicester Tigers. I don't know how long he'll be there for or, you know, allegedly it's a short-term move, but I'm sure if it goes right, they'll want him for a much longer term period than that.
Well, taking someone who understands the current value of players, availability of players... intensely at a time where they need to overhaul their squad and squeeze as much value out of every pound as possible.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, it can't be worse. It can't be worse in terms of recruitment than Leicester have done over the last decade. They need a bit of vision there.
Yeah, I mean, go on, Phil.
I'm just looking at the last 3 years of comings and goings at Leicester Tigers, and I reckon there's probably between 30 and 40 ins and outs per season for the last 3 years from Leicester Tigers.
So, and are most of those coaches?
That's purely players. If you did the coaches, it might even be more than that.
That's just layers of management.
So you're exactly right, Tim. You can't have got it much worse than they seem to have over the last few years.
Yeah.
They do seem to have settled down a bit. I mean, I don't know if I like... where they've gone with their recruitment. and this is slightly hypocritical, bearing in mind being a neutral and watching Sale quite a lot.
With their dozens, Saffers.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, oh, what is this I see? A South African back row. I don't know if that is the right way for Leicester Tigers to have gone. Bearing in mind, well, purely in a practical point of view, Sale have all the good South African back rowers. So,
well, also another practical view, Leicester Tigers, I think, have won the last three under 18 titles.
Have they?
I believe so, yeah. They might have drawn with London Irish on last year's.
That's interesting. I did not know that.
But they certainly won it. They've won it at least a couple of times in recent years. So they've clearly got a lot of good young players who need to bridge that gap to the first team. There's a lot of talk about a lot of young guys there.
Yeah, the challenge for me at Leicester Tigers is re-establishing their identity, re-establishing the fear which comes along with Leicester Tigers shirts. And you know, I honestly do not think that there's a huge amount of difference between a top four team and a top eight team. Most of that comes down to reputation and, you know, the intangibles. You've all got the same amount of money to spend, and Leicester Tigers, being Leicester Tigers for the longest time, must have given them, what, 5, 10% worth of edge? And that's really important. I think they need to get there somehow. And if it was that easy to do, everyone would be doing it, but it's not. And that's why it's so challenging.
And as we will talk about, I mean, you know, Gloucester have taken that approach. They've got their pot of money. They've gone, let's spend it all on wingers.
Yeah.
And possibly not a great idea.
It's a novel approach, isn't it?
Spend it all on international wingers who are going to be unavailable for most of the season.
I can't think of a better plan.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's one to watch anyway. Yeah. Recruitment is going to be fascinating this next couple of years because, like, for example, I understand why they did it, but now, it's only hindsight's 2020, but London Irish spending the money they did on who they did, particularly if it's a ring-fenced premiership next season, and they would never have been in danger of relegation in any season that they've been in the premiership, it would look really silly to have spent the money on the players that they've spent the money on.
Yes. I tell you what, though, Curtis Rona is really turning out to be quite a good signing, I think.
Good fantasy rugby draft player as well for Phil.
He scores, he's competent. You know, he looks like the sort of player that you need to sign to stay up in the premiership. As does Paddy Jackson, to be fair.
Yeah, word on fantasy rugby draft, by the way, JB. You're not having a good time of it, mate.
No, I'm not, am I? Did I? I logged on today to see how I was going, and I saw my opposition scored 150 points.
171.2 points. So your opponent and you got 58.6.
That's amazing, isn't it? Astonishing.
That is. I'm just looking. Your opponent has had a very good day.
Well, if I can have a bad week, I'd be devastated if I got 130 points.
Yeah.
And your opponent had Zach Henry as well, who should have had an assist. Have you seen the Henry butchered try?
Oh, yeah.
When was it? I mean, it was first half, second half?
Second half, about halfway through the second half. He breaks down the right touchline. God knows what was going through his mind. He had a 2-on-1. Yep. Him and Richard Wigglesworth, first of all, he slows down to nearly a walk so Wigglesworth can catch him up. then he dummies, and then he tries to step, but Cordero has not bought the dummy, and he's travelling so slowly that when he tries to step, he doesn't actually go anywhere and just gets tackled. It was a 2-on-1 that school kids should have scored it. It's such a bad mistake.
Well, let's start with this game then. Leicester Tigers looked relatively explosive for the first half. And I wonder, I mean, like I said, I don't think their approach has been right, which is a ball-carrying South African back row with another ball-carrying New Zealander back row and maybe one of the greatest scrum halves to play the game, well, play in the Premiership. They might have enough, but it's not good enough for Leicester Tigers, is my opinion. And then the second half, they just got steamrolled. But at least they've got something there now.
They scored a driving maul try against Exeter,
which is something.
Yeah, there's some signs. They've got some talented players. I really like Freddie Stewart, and I thought Guy Porter did some quality things. Yeah, they've got solid centres. Scott and Tauté are decent without being outstanding. Certainly, neither of them is a Manu. I think Leicester, when you get Ford back for, even if you only get him for like six games this season, I think Leicester probably will be okay.
Yeah, I tend to think there might be enough there. They've shown me bits and pieces, particularly, did they win last week? No, they didn't. They won first week against Gloucester. And I thought, yeah, okay, you know, they can carry the ball. That is something.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not as down about Leicester this season as I was last season.
Damning the faint praise.
And Exeter are just going to Exeter, and they did Exeter things, especially in that second half. And exactly as Rob Baxter spoke about with you, JB, and as he's, you know, talked about many times, it's it was the cumulative pressure that Exeter put on the energy they sap over the course of 80 minutes just means that the dam breaks. Inevitably, the dam breaks, and it did again.
Yeah. Exeter are going to be the best team in the country, and Leicester might still be the worst.
Well,
Exeter, just on Exeter, because Exeter did Exeter things. That's very simple. Were either of you watching the England game? And I know we covered it on our last pod, but were either you watching the England game and thinking, why can't you just be a bit more Exeter?
Yeah, when like just before half time,
the end of the first half.
Yeah.
I was thinking the only Exeter chief on the pitch at that time was Henry Slade, and he doesn't score many crash over pick and go tries.
Yeah, when we said more Exeter, we didn't mean Noel and Slade. We meant the other guys,
and they could.
Yeah,
you could have
the massive guys:
Moon, Williams, and Mullet-Dickey, who we didn't mention actually on the last podcast. I forgot to mention how good the bench was for England. Mullet-Dickey. Max Malins, who looks legit as an international player. I should have mentioned that. And Dan Robson as well. Looked great. But no, they've got a front three they could pick. Johnny Hill, yes. Maybe we'll let Marrow in.
Got front three, they've got front six.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they do. But I mean, England, we'll let Marrow slip in alongside Johnny Hill.
Okay,
maybe.
And then Sam Simmons in the back row. And maybe we'll let Tom Curry and one other in. We'll make allowances for them, but you could easily have five extra players. They'd sort that out.
And Joe Simmons, because of course he doesn't miss kicks on like Owen Farrell. That game would have been wrapped up. Joe Simmons was playing 12, wrapped up.
Yeah.
Or Devoto.
But you're right, Phil, to point out it does highlight just how good Exeter are, because no one else can do it with such ruthless efficiency.
Yeah, exactly.
And they do it every week after week. They do it against Toulouse. They do it against Racing, they do it against Leicester.
Yeah. Whoever needs beating up, they can beat up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Northampton. Anyone see the Northampton game?
Yes.
Great, Bristol. Great game.
Brutal
it
game.
It was a great game.
It was a great game. And did you know, there's clearly been a conversation this week between referees.
Yeah.
They do listen and they are aware. And I think that they have the same empathy for the game that fans have. So last weekend, rightly, there was frustration at the nature of the games, and you know sometimes there are turgid games, and what was the game last Friday night, Newcastle Sale? That was a horrible game.
Well, it wasn't if you're a Newcastle fan,
but yeah, true. But contrast that with the Friday night game this week. It was always going to be a better game because it was Northampton against Bristol, two teams that like to let the boys play. But Luke Pearce had a magnificent impact on that by just chivying players at the scrum. Come on, let's get set. Let's get set.
It's just annoying, though, isn't it?
No, it's not.
It is annoying. I think it's annoying.
A referee shouldn't need to say it. There should be a sense of urgency built in.
I would say, hang on. Excuse me, sir. For the purposes of safety, we build our scrum in a certain deliberate way.
Nah.
And that's it. Nah. But it is true.
For the purposes of having a breather, we take the mud off the bottom of our boots.
Yeah, but then when the...
Then stand around for a minute.
But when
then
the scrum goes down, everyone complains about it. So you've got to take the mud off your boots. You've got to get some purchase.
Well, there was one person that... I mean, I know it's an old school brain, but in the rugby paper today, who was it? Was it Jeff Probyn? I can't remember. Anyway, he said, what if the scrum's just engaged as quick as possible, but with no push? And then the referee said...
Push!
Live. Scrum's live.
Did they not do that? Was that not a thing?
That might have been how it was, but then, because the safety is on the engagement and the hit.
Yeah, but you're always jogging. I mean, good luck trying to get two scrubs to engage and not push as quick as they can on their own time. Okay.
I know. But anyway, Luke Pearce was brilliant and he was counting down the five. I mean, I suggested to that BT Sport should have a countdown as soon as the ref says use it in the corner of the screen. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Do you know why that would be good? Not because anyone would ever listen to it, but because refs in their head then would know that they're accountable. Do you see what I mean? Like, when it, you're not going to have a massive klaxon, the BT klaxon that goes off after 5 seconds. Turn over.
No, but... when it gets to zero, it'd have a little clip of Brian Moore going, for God's sake!
But if refs knew, or as soon as they use it, the countdown would go. My guess is they would make a judgment as to when the ball is roughly going to come out within 5 seconds and then shout use it. So that A, they can be seen to say use it, and it actually happens.
But the difference with Luke Pearce, which is exactly what Phil said last week, is Luke Pearce said use it as soon as the ball was available, not once it had been dragged to the back of a caterpillar.
Yeah, I like that.
It made a big difference.
Northampton did okay, didn't they?
They did.
I mean, I know this is a Bristol... Well, actually, they both did well. Bristol were without three starting fly-halves.
Bristol are winning without a bunch of great players.
Yeah, so the point I make on Bristol... is their great players don't make a huge amount of difference because they're a great team. You know, great teams can, you know, they are more than some of their parts. That also means that sometimes they pay players too much money, in my opinion, because their systems and the process and the coaching are so good. I don't think they always need that top-end talent until the very end of the season.
They were without Morahan, Pietau, Randrandra.
Amazing, isn't
I mean,
it?
Those three alone.
Sinclair.
Sheedy, Sinclair, Earl.
Malins. Ben Earl.
Yeah.
Lloyd.
Luatua.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a serious team not available.
Yeah, they're very, very good. But, you know, they're not reliant on talent, which I think is... a really, really good indication of how good the team is. What do I say about this? Well, okay, so I thought that the Northampton centre partnership did really well. I like the way that it was quite pragmatic. They looked like they were going 12 and 13 with differently for attack than they were on defence. They attacked well. When they actually scored, they did what teams should do, which is carry the ball through heavy traffic, through the middle. But despite all of that, they still didn't have enough to beat a Bristol team who were down to their fourth choice fly half who kept on missing kicks. So I guess they deserved to lose.
Yeah, and I kind of felt that they almost caught Bristol a little bit cold with those early tries.
Yeah.
Like the Ryburn's try, he finished it brilliantly, but it was just some sloppy defending, really, that gave him the opportunity.
The Pierce Francis try was gorgeous little chip.
Yeah, Henry Purdy actually he's so aggressive. Like when he runs the ball, you always feel like he's going to take someone on. He's going to try and go around the outside. And I think you're right about catching cold, Tim. I don't think he'd quite settled into playing fullback. Allegedly, that was his first ever start at
first fullback. First ever senior start at fullback.
Yeah. So he did very, very well. But you're right, he got caught cold, and that's how Pierce Francis nipped over, who himself played really well. And I think when he got injured, that was a bit of a blow for Saints.
Yeah, and Northampton sorted out their defence a chunk.
Yes, he did. But not enough.
Yes.
But the scrum, still an issue. Still killed him.
Yeah. Just not good scrummages. I tell you what, that stupid mistake at the end by Ethan Painter. I like Painter.
Aaron,
so whatever his name is. Well, is there two of them? Or have I just got his name wrong?
I think you got his name wrong.
Fine. I thought it was Ethan. No, I'm looking at it now. It is the name that you said.
Aaron.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's disappointing for Saints. They have got lads to come back, and they are good lads. Tamon Harrison, Courtney Laws. I don't know. I can't really put my finger on why it is that they're not that good.
Yeah, but they're not. They did well for that first 20 minutes, and then you're expecting them to, well, just put some more points on the board at some point during the game, and they just didn't.
Do you know, it reminds me a little bit of how they went against Quinns last week. Obviously, Quinns hammered them in the end, but
for the first 20, they could create things and they look fast and they look exciting. I wonder if they, when it's almost like a mental block they have, like they get demoralized and they stop playing in the way that they enjoy playing.
They are clearly quite fragile. And I don't know what the reason is, but they are.
Well, the players all came out and said after last week, this isn't a coaching thing, this is an attitude thing, it's us. And there was clearly a little bit more steel in that performance against Bristol. But I'm going to be a stuck record, and I'm going to say it again. The psychological impact of having a bad scrum goes through the entire side. It makes you scared to scrummage, which makes you scared to knock on.
Yep.
So you don't take chances. You play within yourself. It has such a... And I honestly think that might be the single thing. Northampton have a dreadful scrum.
Yeah, it is bad. And it's not as if they're not spending the money there either.
Well, they might have the most expensive tight end in the league.
That's ridiculous, isn't it?
Surely Sinclair is that man.
Yeah, Sinclair must be worth more.
Sinclair's not got 100 All Blacks caps.
Yeah.
He is better, though.
Sinclair is better. I agree Sinclair is better, but I'm just saying Franks might be the most expensive.
Yeah,
double World Cup winner.
But hang on, how many World Cups does John Afewa have?
Zero.
He has one.
He has one.
Does he have one?
Was he on the bench?
Yeah.
He definitely has one. Yeah, I guess one World Cup is less than two, isn't it?
But it is an issue, and maybe it's too simplistic to put it just down to that, but I think that has an enormous bearing.
Well, do you know, it's probably not too simplistic, Tim, because if you're losing by 1 point, maybe having a dominant set piece might just get you over that line.
That 1 point.
They are 0-3.
Mm. Speaking of dominant set pieces,
yes.
Do you think it would be unfair of me to call Bath flat track bullies? Because
got absolutely pumped against Exeter and then they bullied Worcester.
Right? Did you see this game?
Exactly.
Did you watch it?
I've seen enough.
I've only seen the.
Hello, Phil.
Philip.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, so I watched this whole game, and throughout it, I was convinced Worcester would win. Convinced. Even at half-time, when they were down, I think Bath might have got their bonus point by half-time, I was still certain that Worcester could win. This score doesn't really paint the picture of what happened. So, Bath were dominant in sort of Bath ways. From what I can remember, there were two relatively lucky tries. So let me just go through what actually happened. Oh, yeah, that's right. So in fairness to Bath, they do lose two starting fly-halves. So they lose Priestland and then they lose Matavesi.
Both with HIAs.
That's right, yeah. So then
18-year-old comes on in the centre and Cam Redpath moves to 10.
Yes.
Yeah. Was it not Max Wright who came on into the centre?
Yeah, I think there was two of them went off. So it was like an 18-year-old lad, youngest ever Premiership. Appearance for Bath.
Max Wright did come on. Cocknessinga was the other guy.
Maybe it was for Worcester, the young guy.
Yes, it was. It was.
Very young kid came on.
Yeah,
I'm getting confused.
Yes. I honestly thought that Bath's scores, particularly one of them, was against the run of play. When I was watching Worcester with the ball, Worcester looked really, really dangerous. Now, they didn't turn any of that threat into points, sadly. And in the second half as well, I mean, Perry Humphreys was basically over the line. And then he just inexplicably throws the ball forward. My take on Bath is when they have the ball in their hands, they are able to do some good things. When they've got to defend, they are not interested. They are bullies. Yeah, you're right, they're bullies. But they're bullies in the worst sense. As in, yes, they bully you with the ball in hand, but you run at them. They could not care less. I am very, very worried about Bath, because if Worcester can rip you to pieces, and they were doing so frequently throughout this game, God knows how they'll fare against...
How they'll fare against Exeter. They got absolutely humped.
Oh, yes, Exeter.
Yeah.
Last week.
Or Newcastle.
Any team that can match them up front will beat them nine times out of ten.
I think a team like Sale are going to smash them to bits. I really do.
Well, if you can get, if you can run at them, you know, if you can take the ball off them, you've got a very, very good shot. I can see them struggling against a team like Northampton, who can actually play. I am very concerned about Bath.
Should we touch on Newcastle?
Yeah, because I mean Northampton are 0-3. Newcastle, not only are they 3 games, 3 wins, they're 3 games, 3 wins, and they have played 3 of last year's playoff teams.
Three of the top five.
What you mean is 2 playoff teams and 1 team that was robbed from the playoffs.
Exactly.
They're going to have some easy games soon.
This is incredible.
Guess who they've got next in the Premiership?
I don't know. Well, because it's not till Boxing Day, is it? The next round again, or the week before Christmas? Boxing Day.
Yeah, Saturday 26th. They'll be playing Leicester Tigers.
Ooh.
So, Leicester Tigers. Oh, no, of course they don't. See, because Leicester Tigers are Leicester Tigers, I was going to say, oh, they'll have a hard run of European games. Of course they won't. That's the old Leicester Tigers. They'll have a rest just like Newcastle.
So, of course. Yeah, but this is a great win to go on the road to Wasps.
Yeah.
And Wasps, who don't lose a huge amount of players to internationals. Newcastle, obviously, also don't lose a huge amount of players. But this is a great win. Genuinely very, very good win.
It's an impressive win. It's the first time that Wasps have lost back-to-back games since Lee Blackett took over.
Yeah, I would say that Wasps fans often point out that they feel that they're a different team without
Jack Willis.
Yeah, they rate him that highly. I think that kind of doesn't give credit to the lads that, you know, all the other lads that play. That said, looking at this team, Tamunga Allen isn't really a starter. Levi Douglas,
Joe
really.
Launchbury, Jack Willis, Dan Robson is the spine of your team.
Yeah, I mean, they are the guys that they rely on. And I think I said this last year about Wasps. I do worry about their depth. But they've proven that they can... Oh, my God. Just having a look at this team. Paolo Adogwu played 13.
He
scored a great try.
He scored a really good try.
Yeah.
Scored a hat full of FRD points.
I'm not saying that he's not a good player. I've seen a lot of him playing at Sale. I really like him. I've never seen him play 13 though.
Doggers.
Yeah. Sam Wollaston.
Yep. So they made a few changes. I don't think they'll panic yet, but bearing in mind Dan Robson's going to be unavailable to them. A lot, potentially Jack Willis as well. They need these players to step up, and losing at home will be very disappointing. Newcastle, though, fair play.
Did not
see this. I mean, what would the odds have been on Newcastle winning their first 3 games?
Very slender.
Like 50-1 type stuff, I reckon. Yeah. Maybe not that high, but not far off.
I wouldn't be surprised, Tim.
Because the teams have played away at Bath and away at Wasps. And at home at Sale.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's a tough old run of games. I guess it's similar to what I said about Leicester, which is when you actually believe in something, it's a lot easier to play. I guess Wasps did the same thing last year when they actually had their tails up and they believed that they were a really good team. They got all the way to the Premiership final.
And Wasps spending significantly less than most teams in the Premiership, and Newcastle will be in exactly the same boat.
Very similar teams in that regard. What do you think safety looks like in terms of points in the Premiership?
I don't think it matters this year. It's going to be a 13-team league next year.
But let's. This is like giving financial advice, Tim.
Yeah.
You can't ever give financial advice on regulations that you suspect might happen in the future.
There are rumours it's going to be announced in the new year. I hope that's not the case, because that's just going to dead rubber the second half of the season.
Yep.
And as soon as teams can't make top 6, it's like, well, who cares?
Yeah.
But hey.
But let's pretend there is relegation.
Okay.
Because all the teams have to pretend that there's relegation, so we may as well play this game.
Safety looks like 35 points.
35 points. So Newcastle
probably not even that, but
I think 35. So I'm just looking In 2018-19, last time Newcastle went down, Newcastle finished on 31 points with 6 wins. Leicester Tigers finished on 41 with 7 wins. They were the next lowest. So I think a team will beat Newcastle's tally of 31 this season. I think the lowest team will have more points than that.
The lowest team will have more points. I think you could be right there, because the bad teams aren't that bad.
Who are the worst teams in your mind? Because there's 3 for me that stand out.
Well, on the basis of what I've seen so far, it's Northampton, Gloucester, Leicester. Northampton, Gloucester, Worcester.
Yeah, that's probably my 3. Northampton, Gloucester, Worcester.
I'm going to separate this. Sorry, go on, Phil.
That's only based on what I've seen. I don't expect that to be a stable 3 teams.
No, because I think Gloucester... I'd say all 3 of those teams have enough to beat teams significantly higher ranked than them as well. But that's, in my mind, they're the 3 teams that are performing the worst at the moment.
So I have no concerns about Exeter Chiefs. I have no concerns about Bristol Bears. And everybody else I have really big concerns about. Genuinely.
Even Sale?
Especially Sale.
Let's talk about Sale, because I was thinking that Sale were going to be flat trap bullies of this season. I thought that with the squad they've got, losing so few internationals, and with the squad that they've assembled, I thought they were going to bully teams. And they do have some problems.
I can't...
Again, say Northampton, I would say if there was one issue, scrum, and that has a massive effect on their side. Similarly, I'd say Sale line out. Has psychological effect. They can't get Lou Diaga back quick enough.
No, but they do have another Dupria, who is 6'10".
JP.
Yeah, so he... I mean, I can't imagine why they've brought in a 6'10" guy when your line out's struggling, but they have. there is another guy who I think they want to sign. And I've got a feeling... Well, they've said he's a international.
No, they've given up on the Russian, apparently.
Ah,
it's in the rugby paper today. They've ended their pursuit of a Russian international player, and they're going to use their academy instead.
Righto. Okay. Okay, so just ignore what I was about to say then. In fact, I'm not going to tell you, therefore you don't need to ignore it. They are taking steps to fix a line-out. I don't think one player fixes a line-out, unless it's Bryn Evans. By the way, Bryn Evans is playing Super Rugby.
Good for him.
Is he?
Yeah. So,
So what's the issue they've got? I mean, is it a coaching issue? Is Dimes running the line out? Because
no.
It hasn't been an issue in, well, it has been a bit of an issue for a few years, actually.
So here is
truthfully, it's let them down on key moments.
You're 100% right, Tim. So I think that line out, when it goes well, was run by Bryn Evans. He was a fantastic line out forward, including steals, actually. He'd often top the chart with steals. I think the changeover to Dorian West has made them struggle, because I think West has got his sights set on having the most ferocious maul, the most amount of lineouts won. And what happens then is, when you don't have a team which are executing lineouts well, you get more and more conservative. And as your throws and your selection for your lineout gets more and more conservative, i.e. getting closer and closer to the front, ironically, you just compound your problems. And they have nobody in that squad who I think is a out-and-out great jumper. Beaumont's back. I don't even think he's a tremendous jumper, to be honest. He's a good jumper, but not a tremendous jumper. Not like Brett Evans.
Lou Diaga, surely. He runs the South African line-out when he's...
Yeah, but we've only seen him, three games?
He's a massive man, but he's in South African context, he's a loose head lock.
Loose head lock, indeed. He might be the answer, but he's not back until, March, I don't think.
But you've also got to have someone to hit him, as in your hookers. And that's one of the fundamentals that... Like last season, when you had Rob Webber and Acker, Rob Webber doesn't offer quite as much round the park, but his arrows were very solid.
Yes.
Now you've got Acker, who is amazing round the park, a ferocious wildebeest, Angry Warthog,
yeah.
But his arrows are all over the place.
As a very wise Frenchman that me and Phil once met whilst eating fish eggs in Japan said, he looks like he's throwing pizzas.
Yes.
And there is some truth to that. The lineup just isn't manufactured. You know, if you've got a bad lineup, you need to manufacture space somehow by beating teams on the ground. They're not doing that. It's a bit of a mess. And I think, you know, the way that the scrum bleeds into Northampton's game, the lineup bleeds into Sale's game.
But think about how the effect that has just on the game as a whole. Like if you were playing against Northampton and you can take that extra risk because you're like, well, if we have a scrum, it's fine, we'll win a penalty. Mm. It's the same against Sale. You're like, well,
kick it.
Sale have got some really dangerous backs that would be great with good counter-attacking ball. But if you were playing against Sale, you'd just go, do you know what? Let's just get the ball off the park.
Exactly. So if you can win your opposition's line-out, the options that you have off the boot are just immense then. Just, like Satan, just kick it out. There's also the fact that I think the Sale have a very confrontational style. That's driven by Steve Diamond. He's very confrontational. If you stop them being confrontational, they don't have what Exeter have, which is that incredible teamwork. You know, they don't have how can I describe it? Basically, what I'm trying to say is when you blunt them going forward with their big ball carriers, they don't have a secondary option, which can be difficult for them.
Do you not think, Phil, because, you know, you're a back by trade, do you not think that go back a couple of years, Sale were really starting, who's the Mike Forshaw? No, he's a defence.
Deacon.
It was starting to cultivate some really good attack. Like, I know it's a ridiculous metric to use at this point, but FRD, fancy rugby draft points, Sale players in the back line were racking them up because Denny Solomona, yep, Marlon Yard, Byron McGuigan, Hammersley were all getting the ball in wide open spaces. They were getting the ball into these channels.
Yeah, yep. you're right. And they played some beautiful rugby. I mean, the way that Deacon coaches them, their details with ball in hand, like I've said many times, they're a great team with ball in hand. They need to go back to that. But on the other hand, when you can just run over people, it's like having a cheat code.
Yeah,
but sometimes your cheat code doesn't work.
What do you think's happened, Phil? Is it just that they've got all these massive men and so they're not bothering with that anymore? What do you think's going on?
I don't know. I think they're obviously playing a lower risk game to a degree, but they're also, as we've said, they're having to play a slightly lower risk game because they can't risk the line out and they can't trust their line out. So that it limits your option for good attacking ball, but it also pushes you towards a slightly lower risk game. So I think just looking at it, if you solve the lineup problem, it gives them a lot more options for their backs to do more things, to try more, to be more experimental.
And they have one, two, to be fair to them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They'll be fine. I think they'll be top four team, no question.
I think they will. But if they want to be pushing, well, they want to be pushing for top four, which they've not achieved under Steve Diamond, despite being having a team that should have been able to do it for the past 2 years. They've not done it.
Well, last
they
year,
have to do it.
Last year doesn't count. The year before that, they were only really at the start of this journey. I have no doubt that they've got the right management.
Last year definitely counts.
No, they've COVID. You can't count.
No,
I'm not having it. Look, it happened to BG. It happened to Sale Sharks. It could happen to anyone. It's just not, you know, you can't count that.
You said earlier on this pod, if a single refereeing decision affects your game, you've not controlled the rest of the 79 minutes.
Yeah.
If one game week affects your season, you've not controlled the other 21 other game weeks that you've not controlled.
Look, I'm not saying it's not exactly the same principle. And I'm not saying that if it's any other team, I wouldn't agree with you. But in this case, it's completely different.
I think, do you know what, I think even in a recent pod, you've said completely the opposite of this. You cited a couple of Sale games towards the end of the season.
You would have
that
to,
they butchered it and should have won.
You would have to find that audio because I have no recollection of that.
Oh, so well, I think Sale should be top four. I think they probably will be top four.
I agree.
But if they want to be competing for the Premiership and also if they want to be competing in Europe, they're going to have to do better than that, and they need a functioning lineup.
I'm fascinated to see how the teams that are in the Champions Cup, like Sale, for example, approach the Champions Cup this time, because I suspect you will see, for example, just take the fly half position, I suspect you will see Rob Dupree told, right, there you go, you've got 2 weeks of Champions Cup. AJ, have a couple of weeks off, you're back in the Premiership on Boxing Day. I suspect that might be how they go. They change it up a load with their squad. But who knows?
Just give me a second. I'm sure I just saw on Twitter. Is there a... Nope, it's fine. It's fine. Just continue. Continue with the podcast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
No, that's fine. Let me just bring up very briefly one thing on Twitter then. Owen Jones, big rugby fan.
I don't know the story.
Political commentator Owen Jones is a big rugby fan, I think. Well, I assume so, because he's been tweeting about rugby.
Go on, tell me more about the story.
Okay, so you may have seen rainbow laces were worn by lots of players this weekend.
Yep.
And apparently, according to Owen Jones, the political activist, because Austin Healey didn't mention it in commentary, that means he is... apparently that's the same as being discriminatory against LGBT individuals.
I don't know. I don't know what to say.
There we go. One quote from one person on this who's getting on Austin Healey's case. He's getting a load of crap for just commentating on a game and not. He didn't mention the rainbow laces. He just did his job of commentating on a game, and one person said, silence equals complicity.
Yeah, well, it doesn't. They're not stupid. And that's all I have to say about it, really. Look, Austin Healey, as far as I'm concerned, we're lucky to have him in the game. From what I can tell, he shows up to rugby. Yes, he is paid, but if he actually wanted to, he'd get paid an awful lot more doing other things. He's there basically for our benefit. So we're very, very lucky to have him. And I don't really care what his views are on this, because I watch him because he tells me about rugby. He's incredibly talented.
Agreed, but I can tell, as he has been at pains to say, his opinion on that and any other topic is, I think, what the vast majority of people, including the three of us, would say. He is opposed to any sort of discrimination of any kind.
It goes without saying, doesn't it? This is what annoys me. It goes without saying that this is your default. You don't have to display it every bloody day. It goes, you shouldn't have, you know, more's the point. I turn on the TV and I watch rugby. I don't necessarily want the moral lecture, but if I'm going to have the moral lecture, I don't want it off Austin Healey. I watch Austin Healey because he's phenomenal at breaking down games. I could not care less he thinks.
He is the best in the game, in my opinion, at spotting the tiny little nuances of what's going on tactically, and then
he's unbelievable.
What is amazing? Then being able to communicate that to people like us who have a little bit of an idea, or even people that are not regular rugby watchers, and manage to explain that in 10 seconds in a way that conveys the point he's making. That is unbelievably difficult to do.
The people that are trolling him now they're just the worst of the worst, because he has a job to do, and they are upset that he has not deviated from his job, which is rugby analyst, to push whatever agenda that they have. I'm sure if you ask Austin about these things, he will tell you that he's against all forms of discrimination.
Which is exactly, by the way, what he has said.
There you go. What a shock. What a shock. But unless... it's fine.
That's Twitter for you.
It's Twitter for you.
I'm looking, reading at these, and it's a ridiculous, unfair pile on to Austin Healey from what I can see. But that's Twitter. that's what happens.
Hey, no publicity is no publicity is a bad publicity. And if Owen Jones is into rugby, well, that's good, as long as he's watching and paying subscriptions and all the rest of it.
Which, of course, he isn't. Well, he might be. I wonder who he...
If he is, give him the benefit of the doubt.
I wonder who he would support. Harlequins?
He's Welsh, so I reckon...
Is he Welsh? No, he's not. He's from Stockport.
Yeah, he's Welsh.
He's from Stockport.
He's Welsh.
Hang on. Who are you talking about?
Owen Jones, the political activist.
Owen Jones, the political activist, is from Stockport, mate.
No, he's not.
He is from Stockport.
He's Welsh.
I guarantee you he's from Stockport.
I thought he was... I thought he was from Stockport as well. Stockport or Sheffield, I had in my head.
1,000,000% he's from Stockport.
What? He's Welsh.
Which part of Wales?
He's born in Sheffield.
Uh-huh. Sounds broadly correct.
Okay. He sounds Welsh.
His name sounds Welsh.
Well, there you go. Born in Sheffield, grew up in Stockport.
Yeah.
How does he sound so Welsh?
I don't know.
I thought he was Welsh.
He's phenomenally wealthy now, I would assume.
What?
Complete grifter.
No, he wouldn't do that.
Oh no, he would.
He would. No, I don't believe you. All the people that work with him on his books or YouTube interviews, he'll spread the wealth so they're all paid equally.
Yeah. Probably the only person richer than him in this whole conversation is Austin Healey. So
anyway. Yes, we have had one tweet at Rugby Podcast.
What?
And it says,
oh, no.
not on this subject, don't worry, I'm moving off this very rapidly. From Greg Gwilliam, who says, lads, before you go too hard on Gloucester on the MWDP, can I just mention, by my count, by 45 minutes into the game, we were on our 4th/5th choice scrum half, 4th choice fly half, 3rd choice left wing, 3rd choice fullback. And then we had the last 20. In the last 20 minutes, we had a back rower in the centre. And we were... He has put a laughing emoji saying, still, we were playing against 13/14 players.
Yeah. Okay.
Gloucester, I've got some issues. It's definitely not Gloucester's year.
No, it's not, is it? So let me just have a quick look. Who was he referring to? Okay, yes, and yes.
Jason Woodward dropped out just before kickoff. Obviously without their international players.
I think Gloucester is struggling a little bit because, like every team in the league, their first 15 is very, very good. When you get that, when your first 15 is very, very good, you tend to believe that your team is very good. It's not necessarily the same thing. Our tweetist there basically hit the nail on the head. They're not very good when they go down through the squad. And unlike Bristol, who have got fantastic systems and processes and can plug in Tiff Eden and can still win, Gloucester aren't quite there.
But Bristol didn't win necessarily because of Tiff Eden.
Yeah, although, they didn't lose.
Although I've got to praise Tiff Eden's hair.
I think Tiff Eden's a good player.
Yeah, he's a decent player.
I've got to say, I like him with ball in the hand. He's a big old boy too. So
yeah, he's a big old boy. His hair.
It's incredible.
Like, it's like Van Damme, or actually the comparison we made on WhatsApp the other night was like Jared Rebecca. Old school Jared Rebecca from Neighbours.
Yeah. I was thinking
Toadfish.
Why were we talking about Jared Rebecca? I think we were talking about it in terms of agents, weren't we? Like the world's most talented agent.
Oh, who managed? Yeah, because the pictures of old school Jared Rebecca with his Tiff Eden-esque mullet, and yeah, your point, JB, was what an agent to have gone to the people of Neighbours and gone, here you go. I've got this guy for you.
Solicitor.
A solicitor.
No.
Tiff Eden, by the way, is Kenny Powers.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's a great shout.
I think he's very good with the ball. I think his distribution's good. He's good threats, running threats.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
And if his kicking's not going well, they've just got Sam Bedloe to bring off the bench and wallop it to get
the ball. Oh, my God. Yeah, I forgot about that kick. Everyone was the commentary was talking about how bad his groin might might be. Not one bit of it.
Yeah. But Gloucester issues. The second game in a row where Sippers hasn't been at fly half. Lloyd Evans was.
Is he injured?
I don't know.
You do get the inside scoop on that. I've got a feeling he might be falling out of favour. But I don't have any evidence or any proof. I've just got a feeling, an inkling.
Is that falling out of favour with the guy that he got appointed as head coach?
Yeah, right, exactly. And the defence coach, who's his best mate?
His best mate.
Yeah, I mean, that's an even weirder one. But yeah, I think it might be more with the team. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe he's injured. Maybe he's injured.
But well done, Harlequins.
Yeah. And the last couple of games, I mean, they're beating who's in front of them. But yeah, as Greg Gwillim on Twitter pointed out, they were down to 13 men at one point. And they've got a little bit of steel about them. And one of the people that you mentioned, JB, that gives them a bit, Scott Baldwin has kind of, the last couple of games from what I've seen, stepping up and giving
he's
him
good, isn't he?
Some hard edges, yeah.
He's good. Apparently, Danny Kerr's off to Biarritz.
Good lad.
Yeah, that's really? That's a pretty nice place to spend the rest of your career.
He deserves that.
Are they in Pro de Deux at the moment?
I believe they are in Pro de Deux.
Who cares? You can ski in the winter, beach in the summer. Love it.
Can you ski in the winter?
It's not far away from the Alps, is it?
Got no idea.
Isn't it? I think Biarritz is one of those places where people do the snow season and the sun season.
Do you know who the biggest... there's two employees...
Is Biarritz not on the... It's probably close to the Pyrenees.
Yes.
It's not on the Atlantic coast, I think.
I think on the two big employers in Biarritz, it's Capgemini, is it? That definitely is a sponsor. And do you know the other one?
No.
Quicksilver, the surfing brand, is from Biarritz.
Ah, okay.
There's plenty of skiing near Biarritz. There you go. So it's an amazing bit of coastline for the beach. And then in the winter, bit of skiing. Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it is. So, yeah, Harlequins. I still can't get on board with Harlequins. I still can't think that they are a good team. I tend to feel that they're only, you know, a few phases away from a disaster at any given point. But they have won two now. I'm just not convinced by them.
Who did they beat last week again?
Northampton.
Okay, so they beat Northampton and Gloucester.
But they lost. Yeah. They opened to someone and they were not impressive.
Exeter.
That'll be why. Okay. Yes. So let's
judge it in a couple more rounds.
Yeah. But they've got some serious talent. Dom Brandt and class. Marcus Smith are...
Oh, we've got to talk Marcus Smith. I was watching the Quins game today thinking, maybe we need to revisit this Marcus Smith England thing. Maybe Eddie Jones needs to go with his gut instinct that he had when Marcus Smith was 14 and get him back involved, because I was watching the Quins game thinking, God, if Marcus Smith does stuff like this behind the Quins pack, imagine what he would do behind a dominant England pack.
Yes, exactly right. So what are you saying? Marcus Smith at 10, Joe Simmons at 12, get the kids in.
That's
what it sounds like to me.
I love George Ford, and I think George Ford's amazing, so I'm not saying get the kids in. I'm saying get him involved in and around the international arena, because he's got that X factor that he can eat, and he's still so young.
So young and so good. Do you know,
Tim, I think what you're saying is that you should get Eddie Jones to go back in time and make him the starting fly half for the 2019 World Cup.
World Cup final, and then JB's whiteboard prediction would have come true.
Yes.
The first whiteboard prediction to come true would have come true if only we had a time machine.
Right, we've still got, I'm not saying we'll do it today, but I reckon for 2020, when we do the first podcast of the year, we should get JB to do some predictions on the whiteboard again.
Happily.
Get thinking about what those might be, JB.
So Marcus Smith, I'm with
Marcus
you.
Smith starting for the Lions.
That's a great prediction. Get it on. 9.
There you go. Because we talked about this on the international podcast. The tradition of the Lions having an uncapped player going on a Lions tour. Smith would be a great shout.
I keep forgetting he's uncapped because he was in the England team. I assume that he's got a cap. Of course he doesn't. He's just the highest paid teenager in the history of the game. Yeah, Marcus Smith. I am with you with the England stuff. I'm with you with the creativity, with basically everything. Something has really struck a chord with me about George Ford's a very different proposition. George Ford said this week, which we referred to in the last podcast, regarding the time bomb of the ball.
Ticking time bomb, having possession of the ball.
And that indicates to me what a deep understanding George Ford has of the international game, which I wonder if you would get that with someone like Smith, who wants to go out there and play and do all his magic. Because the international game, as France discovered, does revolve around knowing when to kick that ball.
Yeah, get rid of it. When not to have the ball.
Yeah, and it's not sexy. In fact, it's a real, real tough discipline to master. And I think George Ford has that.
Mm. Yeah. But for now, Harlequins can enjoy him.
Yes,
enjoy Magic Marcus.
Yeah, but how much are we enjoying France? Like you say, they've already got Untermac and now Carbonell and...
Jalibert.
It's just... I'm not saying get him in. Maybe a player like that should be in the squad and potentially be battling for a bench spot, or alternatively, you know, the odd game against Italy, or, you know, the game against Georgia would have been ideal. I know I am contradicting myself because I say I quite like that Eddie Jones is reinstilling how hard it is to get a cap and increasing what it means to actually get one. But I'm just saying, based on the club performances, albeit against Northampton and Gloucester, so let's wait and see if he can keep this going. But the back end of last season and the start of this season, in not a great Quinn's team,
it's not
Marcus Smith
team.
Is pulling strings.
Well, what I would say is, I know that Eddie Jones talks to 50 or 60 players. He's referenced that in the past. And he tells them, if they're not in the squad, he tells them what they need to be doing to get into the squad. And I'd be really interested to find out what he's telling. Marcus Smith and Joe Simmons, for example, who are the next cabs off the rank in my mind.
He's saying to Marcus Smith, cut your hair, Marcus.
Yeah.
Stop playing with your hair.
Well, Harlequins next up in the Premiership have Bristol. So that'll be a great test for them.
It's a great game, Matt.
Here is a question regarding Eddie Jones. And I'm not saying this flippantly at all. Do you think Eddie Jones tells his players the truth when he tells them what they need to work on?
Not always.
I don't think he does.
But I think he will do it at times. He will tell the truth to them. I think he'll do it different for different players.
Yeah.
Totally.
I completely agree with you there. Completely agree with you. Which must make it so bloody hard for players to work with him.
I'd love to know what he says to Ben Curry.
Yeah.
That would be fascinating. I'd love to... If I could wiretap a phone call, those phone calls would be amazing to listen into, wouldn't they?
Particularly when Ben picks the phone and says, hello, Tom here.
Mm. I bet he does that with Tom. He's just, Tom's like, you just sniff if Ben's around. Right, okay, good. Is he gone? Good, he's gone. Right, I can talk to you.
It's brutal. The Ben Curry thing is brutal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we know. Anyone who watches any level of any amount of Premiership rugby will know Ben Curry is a fine player. And Tom Curry is arguably... Well, David Flatman said he was, actually. So I'll go with Flats. England's most important player.
He's up there. He's up there.
He's carrying...
His work rate is phenomenal. I love his dynamic ball carrying in this game against France. It was awesome, yeah. Ooh.
And Ben Curry is as good. I mean, he really is. Maybe he's 98% of the way there.
Being in and around the international arena and given a chance, I'm sure he'd take it. But
Why would you not want two Tom Currys?
That's a great question.
It is a great question. But then you go, well, who'd you drop? You've got to do the Cocker's Law. Who'd you drop? Are you dropping Ben Earl? Are you dropping Jack Willis?
I mean, Diamond quite frequently rotates Ben and Tom. You could basically drop Tom.
I mean, the thing I feel... The one thing I feel bad for Ben Curry about is, you know, his brother's got like £500,000 more than him now.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're twins.
They're identical. They're genetically identical.
How has this happened? How is one driving a Micra?
I bet Tom Curry buys Ben an extra special Christmas present this year, just out of sheer guilt.
Do you reckon that... I'm pretty sure that Tom Curry does have the bigger room in their flats. Do you know when they move, you know, to their shared houses? I bet Tom always gets a bigger room because he can pay more rent. Simple as that.
So I know they spent lockdown at home together, but they don't live together still, do they?
Probably. How old are they? 22?
About 22, 23.
Yeah, probably. Why would you? Why would you live on your own?
Yeah, but with your identical twin brother, I don't know. That seems, I don't know. I'd love to know that.
I'll ask him that. Well, I'll ask him next time I see them in a press conference. I asked in a press conference after the European game, because they've got to put up a better player as well. Tom, what's it feel like with your new fame now? And he turned around to me and said, "I'm not going to answer that." And then Diamond and him stood up and walked out, and that was it. Yeah, real warm feelings.
What are we talking about, Quinns? So let's judge Quinns in a few more rounds, but some promising elements going on. Again, he got a red card today, Andre Esterhazen, for a really stupid, elbow.
Which was
hard to see. I couldn't really see it, but the TMO was convinced, and that was good enough for the ref, and that should be good enough for me. So, yeah,
there you go. And so I think that's all the teams, is it not?
It is. We've got some games next weekend.
Yeah, European rugby is back.
You need to explain to me, or re-explain to me, how does the Champions Cup work this year?
Right. So it's been put into two conferences.
Okay.
Everybody has a ranking based on where they finished in their league. So Exeter are one, Wasps are two, because they were first, second in the league, etc. Top six teams go like that. You were drawn into... In fact, Phil, come on, help me out. You were drawn into basically small pools of four, but within a conference of 12?
So there's two conferences of 12.
Yes.
And you only play against the corresponding tiers...
Yes.
In your conference from the other divisions. So if you were first and second, for example, you're in tier one. So if you're first, you're in tier one.
Yeah.
You will only play against tier four.
Which is the teams that finished fifth and sixth
in their league. Seventh and eighth.
Oh, yeah, because it's top eight, isn't it? Yeah, so teams that finished seventh and eighth. Yeah, you're right.
Seventh, eighth. So you'd only play against seventh or eighth from the Pro 14 and the Top 14, so the other league, so you wouldn't play any Premiership clubs if you're a Premiership club.
Yeah.
And you play them home and away. So you play four games in the group stage, but only against two teams.
Yeah.
And then that decides the two pools. And then I'm just looking up what happens at the end of the pools.
Yeah, so you play four games. There's no interleague matches. It's only playing Pro 14 and Top 14 in the case of England teams, and you play the two teams home and away. That's a succinct way of doing it. And the teams you play are based on league position from the last season. So, let's just go through it. In Pool 1, let's just rattle through the games. So on Friday, the season starts 5:30 p.m.
5:30 p.m.
5:30 p.m. Perfect. Northampton Saints v Bordeaux Bègles.
I mean, unconventional, but fine.
Yeah, Northampton v Bordeaux at 5:30.
It's something that football has done with the midweek kickoffs.
Yeah.
With the Champions League.
Without crowds.
And no, Premier League.
Yeah, of course, that makes sense.
Well, Northampton might have 2,000. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So Bordeaux, I don't know how Bordeaux play. I have no idea which players they have, but I do know how Northampton are suffering. I think Bordeaux.
Bordeaux got to the semi-final of the Challenge Cup and against Bristol, and that was that Max Malin's late show, won that for them. They look pretty decent.
That'll do me.
And they will have their French internationals available.
Ulster, Toulouse.
I'll be working at this one. I'm looking forward to it very much. Although no crowd at Ravenhill, which is a real shame. But there you go. 8 p.m. kickoff. Ulster, Toulouse.
Are you allowed out in Ulster?
Belfast. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. I think Northern Ireland's a proper lockdown. It's not quite as bad as Wales, where they've got like flipping.
Oh, Mark Drayford.
What the hell is going on in Wales, Jay?
Well, I mean, look.
It's like temperance again.
So my office is in Wales. All my family are in Wales. I obviously live in Manchester, but I spend a lot of time in Wales. It is a disgrace. Absolute disgrace. I would. Oh, no, I can't say that. I can't say that. Put it this way. We're not allowed any alcohol. On Friday at 6 o'clock, all alcohol stopped being served. So it's just an absolute disgrace. You've really triggered me there, Tim.
Does anyone think that Ulster can beat Toulouse?
No.
Ulster are 8 from 8 in the league. I don't know if Hendo and Stockers and the like will be available again this weekend. Hopefully,
should be. Yeah. Whether Stockers
and Hendo had a week off last week, didn't they?
Yeah,
because of injury.
Yeah. So.
Because of injury.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's injury.
It was injury. Yeah. It was injury.
Bristol Clermont.
No way.
Let me just hit pause on the pod for just one quick second. Hold on. we're back. There you go. Sorry about that.
Yeah, anyway. That's a severe injury that both of them suffered.
Ulster to lose. Yes, I think they can win. I don't think they will.
Yeah, I think that is a fair assumption.
No, give me Ulster. Joke. Big Ulster win.
I mean, hey, listen, Marcel Coetzee gets on the front foot a little bit and... Who knows?
Toulouse, Ravenhill in mid-December. We've all been there to Ravenhill in mid-December.
We literally have all been there, yes.
It is brutally cold and it is an intimidating atmosphere when there's people in there. It will be, it will be even colder. It'll be even worse for the travelling French. To go there with no people, with not even any fans in there. So give me Ulster.
No. Bristol Clermont.
All right, so yeah, we're on to Saturday and 1 p.m. kickoff, Bristol Clermont. What a game this looks like.
I think Clermont.
Bristol, will they have, I don't think they're still going to have no Morahan, no Pietau. They will have hopefully Earl Malins and... Sheedy Sinks. And Sinclair Lloyd. And Malins, if I didn't say him already.
And Lloyd?
Yeah.
So, Luatua?
I don't know
about that. Luatua is... I know he was not there for the final, but he is key. Luatua is key for Bristol.
Huge test for Bristol, this.
Yeah, it is. I think Clermont beat them handily.
I suspect you're probably right, but Bristol at home... And they'll be Come really on, pumped up for this. So,
how are Scarlets doing in the Pro 14?
Oh, great question. I've no idea. Looking it up now. Scarlets are third in the Conference B, having won 3 out of 7 games.
Give me Scarlets.
But they had that brilliant win away at Bath a few years ago with Tyg Byrne doing that dummy and try.
Ah, there is a doll up for grabs.
Oh, yeah, they're the doll up on the post. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I'm going Bath.
Yeah, Bath to beat them up.
I don't think
Flat track bully Bath.
I don't know how Scarlets are playing. I don't know anything about this team other than Glenn Delaney coaches them. I like Glenn Delaney. I think he's brilliant. I think that Scarlets will win this. I think if they take on Bath, if they run at them, Bath will fold.
At the same time, your other option at that time, the game that JB will be watching, be Toulon v Sale.
It seems like only one outcome could possibly happen here. Sale to win handsomely. Big South Africans beating up other big South Africans.
See, if I were Bath and Sale, I mean, I would be thinking we've got the squads to go for it in both competitions, but I think both of those sides, English sides, will be thinking, and in fact, you know, looking down to Wasps as well, the other England side playing on Saturday, I think they will be thinking Premiership is where it's at.
Do you know what?
And this is a second thought. So I don't think they're going to put their strongest team out.
I would agree with you, except for this. I have been at a Sale Sharks game when they really were. They when actually, relegation was a real, real possibility.
And they had Toulon. I remember.
And they had Toulon, and they still put out all of their best players, which I thought was madness at the time. But when they are in this competition, they do mean business. I mean, last time they were playing all their stars, including John. What's his name now? Jonathan. What's his name? I've forgotten his name now. How can I forget his name? Friend of the pod.
John Mills.
Jonathan Mills. who was critical at that time. So, yes.
Maybe they'll go big in this first pool match. If they lose, then they'll just shift and go, well, it's over.
Yeah. I'm trying to think about it.
Well, certainly in these first two rounds.
In the first two rounds, they will be going for it. They'll be a full-strength sale team. But Toulon, I think, are like second or third, are they not, in the top?
Yeah, they're one of the top teams.
They're going well.
Mm. But it's Toulon, they're sort of mad as well.
Manonou's back playing as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
At Toulon?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
After his stint in America, he's 38 now.
Yes, I've still got two more years.
I don't know if there'll be a crowd in this game or not, Dan. I think France is pretty strict as well at the minute. But I could see Sale sneaking that if they put their best team out. Faf de Klerk needs to start playing like Faf de Klerk.
He's not playing well, is he?
No. He's so important to them.
Yeah.
Mm.
So anyway, but I think they can win. I'm gonna go Sale sneaking an away win.
Well,
on the basis that you've said they're putting out their best team, I'll go with it.
Montpellier Leinster. I have no idea how either team is.
What
going.
A game!
Historically, it's a great game. That's
what
for sure.
A game this could be in Montpellier. Oh, this is tasty.
Montpellier. So I've watched them a few times over the last few years, and every time I'm in awe of the amount of talent that they've got on the pitch, and then stunned by how badly they put that talent together,
yeah.
Which is not what I could generally say for Leinster, which I'm generally in awe of both the talent and how well they put it together.
Yeah.
So
is Johan Usen playing regularly for them?
He was. I've looked a couple of times this season, and he wasn't in the games that I looked. I'll just have another check now of last week's fixtures. No. So he's probably... Oh, actually, he was on the bench. Him and Lazowski and TT Lamasatelli were all on the bench.
Yeah, that's a serious team, isn't it?
Montpellier beat Clermont away this weekend.
Did they?
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I have no idea what goes on there. Give me Leinster.
They've got Rattes at fullback.
They've got some serious talent.
Yeah, they
Cobus
do.
Reinach as well. Girardeau or Bismarck Duplessis as your hookers.
They've got some good players. Aouas, the lad who punched the Jamie Ritchie in the Six Nations.
Oh, yeah.
A proper bad boy.
Oh, so they've got some good players. Pickamall on the bench. Louis Pickamall on the bench.
It's casual, that, isn't it?
Wow. Well, that's huge. I mean, I fully expect Leinster to win. Although
yeah,
it's away. It's away, so it's tough. But yeah, Leinster.
Dragons Wasps. I'm going to shock you and say, call Dragons.
No.
After their win against Glasgow, they can do anything.
The win against Glasgow, and actually, when they put all of their players out at the same time, it's not a bad team.
I did see Jamie Roberts scored a try from about 20 metres.
What?
Last week, I think it was.
What?
Yeah.
It depends what team that Wasps put out. I mean, if I were Wasps, I don't know. I think I'd. But then again, it's that.
Hang on, Dragon. What am I saying? Dragons got panned by Bristol, absolutely panned by them, in a European semi.
Yes.
And Wasps absolutely panned Bristol. So using Dean Ryan logic, who happens to be the coach of Dragons,
we beat the team who beat the team.
Yeah. So Dean Ryan logic is going to come back to defeat Dean Ryan. Dragons lose to Bristol. Bristol lose to Wasps. Therefore, Wasps should hammer Dragons by, using Dean Ryan's own numbers, 60 points.
But the problem with that is if Dragons do beat Wasps, what does that mean?
Well, it means Dean Ryan should be fired. they're his numbers, not mine.
And then the final game on Saturday in the Champions Cup, Edinburgh v La Rochelle.
You're a better man than I am if you know how that'll go down.
Yeah, I'd say you're a better man than I am if after the whole of Saturday you sit and watch the whole of that game.
I wish it was a better game because I like that time game.
I'd like Bristol Clermont that one. The whole day building up to Bristol Clermont.
I know La Rochelle are a cool team to watch when they get it all together.
They're a very cool team. It's just Edinburgh. They've gone off the boil a little bit recently, haven't they?
Yeah,
they have. But like La Rochelle, Bottier, the amazing Victor Vito, who is the unbelievable loose head who looks like a supervillain?
Priso, all right, is it?
Danny Priso.
Priso, yeah.
I mean, they've got so much talent in that pack, and it's so explosive. And they're top of the Pro 14.
They are.
Top of the top 14.
Yeah.
Top 14.
Yeah, just give me them. Makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then on to Sunday. I probably will watch the Edinburgh game because I've got nothing else to do because Ireland is completely shut down and I will be somewhere in Limerick by that point. And I'll have not. I was really looking forward to a couple of jars in Belfast or Limerick and I'm not going to be able to do any of that.
Can you not even get around it by the substantial meal thing?
Maybe. I don't know if they're doing that in Ireland.
Who knows?
I think they're really properly shut down. Anyway. Sunday, you've got Leon Gloucester, 1 p.m.
Leon.
Is Carl Ferns in the starting team, or is it Bastereau number?
Well, he would be.
Of course, he's moved.
For Ruin.
Yeah, of course. Exeter at home to Glasgow. Exeter.
Yeah. Exeter.
One-way traffic, that one. Well, not one-way traffic, but only one winner. Racing 92 against Connacht. Home win.
Yeah.
And Munster against Quinns. Home win.
Home win.
There we go. Perfect.
That's a good accumulator. I wonder what odds you'd get for 4 home wins on the Sunday.
Yeah.
That is a good accumulator, actually.
Might have a look at that.
Get your acca. Get your acca on that. It's our little top tip. And if any betting companies want to sponsor us to have a bet of the week, that would be mine.
Yeah, yeah. Sponsor us. Our listeners are very vulnerable.
Looking forward to it. I need to find a way to explain the rules of the competition in a sentence for people that ask me. Inevitably, they will.
That might be tough. It's a bit complicated.
Yeah.
So the nice thing about this weekend, now I know that you're working, Tim, and referencing the last podcast.
Oh, I'll have to dial in to the podcast from Ireland as well because I'm not flying back till Monday morning.
Ah, okay. Well, we'll work that out. Yeah. So if anyone dares whinge about the ref, you've got to come through with what we said on the last podcast, which is start off with, hey, mate. And then hold their feet to the fire as to why they didn't do their job properly to start with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like Sale for 21 weeks of the season didn't control their controllables.
Correct.
Again, not entirely true.
And then they went and had, an orgy in a Manchester Metropolitan student union. That's right, isn't it? I think I've got that right.
Look, they were controlling their controllables. Okay. They were very controlled.
Excellent. Right. We are done.
It is almost 12:30 on Monday morning.
Oh, my goodness me.
It started at 8:30. It's now 12:30.
Crikey. Right. You know where we are. You know what we're doing. Tell your mates. Look out for the Benjamin Kaiser interview. Other than that, just thank you for listening.
Perfect.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.